You're listening to Simpler One Earth Living from Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simple Living Works. This is episode 114 of Simple Living Works podcast with co-hosts Lee Van Ham and Jerry Iverson. Today we feature part one of a presentation by John Deere of Pace et Bene and Campaign Nonviolence. Greetings, Lee, from Paso Robles, California, and Simple Living Works.
And I greet you, Jerry, from San Diego and Jubilee Economics. I'm thinking about this topic that we're working with today with John Deere, really a distinguished and well-seasoned expert on talking about peace and working for peace. And I'm thinking about the context in which we're living right now, when the atmosphere of language is, there's so much rhetoric of hostility and anger. And, I have a family member who's been talked about in terms of being, another Mexican. And just all this derogatory stuff that permission has been given to talk this way, all the ways we think it's okay to treat people who are immigrants, even though everyone in this country is an immigrant. This is an incredible environment. So listeners, here we are in this challenge, and we need, I think, articulate voices, because sometimes I think this word peace can just sound so weak and flabby, and so here we are today in a podcast where we get to listen to a really articulate person who gives peace some muscle, and I'm so glad for it. So, we aren't just talking about peace between North Korea and the U.S. or Israel and Palestine. We're also talking about how we live peaceably with all of the species, with the earth, with one another, and with ourselves, all of that. So it's really exciting stuff, Jerry, and I'm just glad that you had the occasion to bring John Deere to all of us, and that we get to share him with our leaders. So tell us how you were introduced to John, and how we're going to break this presentation up that he has made.
Well, Lee, I was reintroduced to John's work when I heard him speak twice on the central coast of California in early 2018. Especially poignant for me was his unwillingness to accept meditation and inner peace as sufficient for a life of peace. He said emphatically, we need feet on the ground, we need action, we need people in the streets. You'll notice he consistently uses peace and nonviolence together. The word peace, like the word love, by itself is too easily manipulated. It must always be accompanied by nonviolence. Well, while I prepared for our conversation, I listened to John's recent presentation in Madison, Wisconsin, and realized that he covered all three topics that I wanted to cover. First, his life story. Second, his new book, They Will Inherit the Earth, Peace and Nonviolence in a Time of Climate Change. And third, the Campaign Nonviolence Week of Actions coming in September, about the same time as the UN's International Peace Day, September 21st. So he gave me permission to use the audio from that presentation. His passion is inspiring. We start in this episode with his life story.
I'm happy to introduce our guest of honor. Reverend John Deere is a longtime peace activist, lecturer, and teacher, and he's the author of over 35 books, including Thomas Merton Peacemaker, Lazarus Come Forth, Living Peace, and The Nonviolent Life. He has been nominated many times for the Nobel Peace Prize, including by the Archbishop Desmond Tutu. He works with CampaignNonviolence.org and the Vatican Nonviolence Initiative, which he was telling us a little bit about, which sounds very exciting. He lives in New Mexico, and I can say, having gotten to read a little bit from his most recent book, that it's clear to me that he is someone who lives in the spirit of Jesus. And as a Christian, there's really nothing more profound that I could say. But it's clear that the way that he lives and the message that he gives attracts people from many faiths. That's evident that he's been, there have been so many different faith leaders that have resonated with his work. So it's without further ado that I want to ask John Deere to come to the stage and give us a talk.
Well, good evening, everyone. Thank you so much, Tony, for welcoming me here. It's wonderful to be in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm just coming over from Milwaukee this morning, and it's a little cold. But I really want to thank Pastor Karen, wherever she went, and James Reeb. I've been hearing great things about you all, and thank you for welcoming me here. And when we announced this through Campaign Nonviolence, I think what happened was Beth and Tom, from the church, probably wrangled Pastor into this, and they're around here somewhere. So let's give a round of applause for Beth and Tom and Pastor for welcoming me here, and thank you, Tony, wherever you all went. And it's lovely to be here, but I'm nervous in front of all you famous Madison peace activists and peacemakers. I don't know if you heard the story of the Karen, of the young priest giving his first sermon, and he's really nervous, and he comes to the microphone. He taps on the microphone and says, "Something's wrong with this microphone," and the congregation goes, "And also with you." Okay, I'm sorry. That's my best joke. It's going to be downhill from there. I know. It's pretty rough. I know it's rough. And please call me John, because my name is just so ridiculous. Father Deer just doesn't work. You know? But it's so good to be together on this day of all days, you know, on this very solemn day as we remember this gift from the God of peace to us, this holy prophet to the nation and the world, Martin Luther King, killed by our government 50 years ago tonight. And I, you know, invite you to think about, where were you, and what does Dr. King mean for you, and what does today mean for you? And I was telling the friends that, you know, I'm just, and have been always obsessed with Martin Luther King since I was a little boy. I don't know what happened to me. So maybe I could tell you a little bit about that and how all of that has led to this book. And I thank the church for having this and selling my books. They Will Inherit the Earth, Peace and Nonviolence in a Time of Climate Change. And then maybe end by sharing some of what I'm learning about the connection between King and nonviolence and the earth and the struggles and the movement. And then we'll have time, I think, Karen, for questions and answers and reflections. And by the end of the evening, we will have resolved everything. I'm trying to make them laugh, Karen, here, and it's not working. No, so I'm 58 and grew up in North Carolina. My family is an old-time newspaper publishing family, and my father, my uncle, my grandfather, it's just all newspapers, and my uncle was the head of the National Press Club in the 60s, and my dad was the next in line, and he had the little tiny newspaper in Elizabeth City, North Carolina, where I was born and raised, and he came out in support of Dr. King and the Civil Rights Movement and John Kennedy. So the Klan had to stop that, and what the Klan did was threaten to kill me. So I grew up getting death threats in the 60s, blood-stained postcards addressed to me and my older brother that we're going to kill you if your father keeps doing this. I think this is partly how it happened to me. And then my uncle died, and we moved to D.C. in 1967. And overnight, my father became the head of the National Press Club. And we grew up walking the halls of the press club and then the White House and Congress, and I was appalled by all of this, but totally politicized and very aware of Dr. King and Bobby Kennedy. 50 years ago, I'm hearing music. I don't know about you, but I think it's my condition. So 50 years ago tonight, we were out to dinner I'm asking you, where were you? And, you know, what did it mean for you? And we didn't hear the news, but at the next morning, my mother came in and woke me up at 5 a.m. I'm 9 years old, and says, Dr. King has been killed. You have to get up now. And that kind of stayed with me for 20 years. And I watched TV, and my father said, okay, I'm going to take you down to see the riots and the curfew. And I saw the troops around the U.S. Capitol. Listening, said, you need to remember this for the rest of your life. And then he took me to the Poor People's Campaign in Resurrection City. And then when Bobby Kennedy was killed, we all went in depression, like maybe many of us. And I was like really depressed. And I went to college at Duke to get away from the Catholic Church. This is a long, complicated story, but and decided. And so I majored in African American history to figure this out. The great guy, our guy. And then I thought, well, no, you just kill him. This is what we do. You kill your prophets. And to end the movements, you kill the leaders of the movement. And that's the end. And I thought, well, you killed Dr. King and Robert Kennedy, the greatest people we've produced. There's nothing you can do. And then I got mad at God. And then I said I didn't believe in God. And that didn't work. And one day I got knocked off the fraternity bar stool. It's a long, sad story. I saw the light, realized I believed in God, and my next thought was I had to become a Jesuit, a priest. How did that connection work? It's just, it was a major setback. And so I go to tell my parents, I'm 20 years old, not that bright as you see, and I said, Mom, Dad, I'm going to be a priest. And they just thought, that is the most ridiculous thing I'd ever heard. And they begged me not to. And I said, well, I would wait a year. And I thought, what am I going to do? I actually worked for the Robert Kennedy family. And then they paid me $50 a week. And I saved up this little bit of money. And I thought, if I'm going to spend my life following this guy, Jesus, I want to see where he lived. So I go back, Mom, Dad, I'm going to go on holy pilgrimage for 3 months to walk through Israel, to see where Jesus lived. And my mother went, it's worse than we thought. I'm trying to tell you about the book, believe it or not. And the week I left, Israel invaded Lebanon. So do you remember the summer war of 1982? Who cares? Just another war. It was all orchestrated out of the Pentagon. They called it Operation Peace for Galilee. And we killed 60,000 people in 3 months. And all the Holy Land pilgrimages were canceled. And I had a backpack with a Bible and walked through Jerusalem for a month and to Bethlehem and Nazareth to go to the Sea of Galilee. And it was so beautiful. And I wanted to see where Jesus lived. And so there's a big blue lake in the hills. And I'm camping out there for 2 weeks. And on the North Shore, there's a little tiny chapel on a hill. It's about the size of this room, Karen. And it was a Wednesday afternoon. And I walk in the room, July 1982. And it said on the wall as you walk in the church, like graffiti, if you can believe it, blessed are the poor. And I thought, what? And then I look over. It says, blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for justice. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are those persecuted for working for justice. It's the chapel of the Beatitudes. And I said out loud in the empty chapel, oh my God, I think he's serious. I had never thought about this in my life. My plan was to be a pious Jesuit, which if you're Catholic, you know that's an oxymoron, but we won't talk about that. And I walked out onto the balcony looking out over the whole Sea of Galilee. I'm going, are you kidding me? When you're on holy pilgrimage, you get wackier than usual. And I'm talking to God. I'm going, like, I have to do this? Like, isn't that the point of, like, doesn't Karen have to do this? Or the Pope or somebody? You know, like, this is the job description of the Christian? And I thought, and I thought, and I said, I'm a little ridiculous. And I said, I'm looking over the sea. Okay, God, I promise to give my life to the Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount. Thank you very much. On one condition, if you give me a sign. Wasn't that brilliant? Because we don't get signs anymore. I found a loophole. And all of a sudden, there are these loud explosions. And 3 black Israeli jets fell from the sky, breaking the sound barrier, setting off sonic booms. Boom, 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 and swooped down. and killed a bunch of people 15 miles away, border of Lebanon. And it changed my life, and I was like, right, I'll get with the program, and here I am tonight. It had been happening every hour, but who cares about war? And I guess I opened my eyes in case, like, God showed up. And instead, I saw the reality of the world, which is sisters and brothers killing sisters and brothers around the planet in the name of God, actually in the name of Jesus, actually at the place where he said, blessed are the peacemakers. And a week later, I entered the Jesuits, and then I'm hanging out with Daniel Berrigan. Do you all know who Daniel and Philip Berrigan? You remember the great heroes of the peace movement in the 60s and 70s? Dan just died a year and a half ago at age 95, my great friend and teacher. Well, if you're a friend of the Berrigans, it's like a requirement of friendship to get arrested. He's like, go get arrested at the Pentagon, kid, and report back. So I did. Anyway, long story short, I've been getting arrested regularly and hammered on a nuclear weapon with Philip Berrigan in a plowshares action, and I've done almost probably a year in prison. I've been arrested about 80 times, and I can't vote again, and the government considers me a terrorist, and I'm highly monitored, and I can't travel to a lot of countries, and I have a very serious problem with recidivism, so we probably shouldn't even talk about it. I'm trying to make them laugh here, Karen, and it's not working. But no, Dan said when I was a kid, well, hey, you know, if you want to follow Jesus, you better look good on wood. This was my life. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
We'll return momentarily to John Deere's presentation. I had an opportunity in a recent trip I took through Chicago, Des Moines, and Lincoln, Nebraska, to talk to the West Suburban Faith-Based Peace Coalition in a western suburb of Chicago. The gathering was held at the Lombard Mennonite Church. And there, I was so pleased that Frank Getz, who was the anchor person for this event, wanted to distribute copies of Jubilee Circles to the first 25 people who came, which is pretty much exactly the number who did come. So everyone there got a copy of the little Jubilee Circles guide for One Earth Living. And what I realized too in that gathering, and I made this point with them, that if we work for peace and we continue to live our lives thinking and acting in a multi-earth paradigm, we can't really be very effective. We won't really have all that much impact. So it's really important to make our actions and our thinking about peace in the One Earth paradigm, the One Earth story. So I would encourage all of you to get a copy of Jubilee Circles. It's easy enough. Just ask us for it. You can get it online through Amazon, but if you just ask us for it, we'll be just delighted to send you a copy of this little 64-page mini book, and it'll tell you more about Jubilee Circles. Well, let's return now to John Deere's presentation.
What we're remembering tonight is what Dr. King said, 50 years ago, really his last words. And just before he said, I've been to the mountaintop and looked over and seen the promised land, and I may not get there with you, but we as a people will get to the promised land. You remember that? He said, the choice is no longer violence or nonviolence. It's nonviolence or non-existence. It's an incredible statement that sums up the predicament of the whole world that we're all going through right now. And as I reflect with you on this book and maybe Dr. King and his way of nonviolence, and I invite you to reflect on his life impact with you, I want to invite us tonight in this terrible moment to be the people he was talking about. The people who are going to choose nonviolence and do our part to lead humanity back from the brink of non-existence. Just to be part of that global grassroots movement and carry on the legacy of Dr. King. What do you think of that? Woo! That's our hope. That's what I find. I was the head of FOR and was very close to all of Dr. King's friends and coworkers, and I just stepped down living with Daniel Berrigan when September 11th happened, went down to volunteer, by chance met the head of the Red Cross. She asked me to be the coordinator of chaplains. We had 600 chaplains ministering to 50,000 direct relatives, and I worked once a week at Ground Zero. And on Saturday afternoons, organized the main demonstrations against the bombing of Afghanistan, as you do. I don't know where I went wrong, but I thought, love your neighbor and love your enemies. It made sense to me. Well, the New York Times wrote about me. The Jesuits had so many complaints from their rich benefactors that I was immediately kicked out of New York after all that. And so I moved to New Mexico. I had friends there in the middle of the desert and nowhere. They said, well, when they finally catch up to you, just come to the desert of New Mexico because, like, who cares? So I said to the Archbishop, I'll take the parish nobody wants. So he gave me 9. Way out in the middle of nowhere. Poorest state in the country. Number one in child hunger, worst education, domestic violence, suicide, drug addiction, military recruiting, birthplace of the atomic bomb, birth of every nuclear weapon in the country at Los Alamos. More millionaires and PhDs at Los Alamos, the nuclear weapons lab, than any other place on the planet, surrounded by terrible poverty. And we started a peace campaign there, and I had all these parishes. Throughout all of this time, and then as the Iraq War was beginning, this publisher asked me to write an anthology of Gandhi's writings. So I'm starting to read Gandhi, and I read the entire collected 100 volumes of the writings of Gandhi. I know, it's over the top. And did you know that Gandhi read from the Sermon on the Mount every morning and every evening for 45 years? He's Hindu, by the way. Just wanted to tell you that. He says, Jesus is the greatest person of nonviolence in the history of the world. That just kills me, coming from the great man. And then poor Gandhi goes on and says, and the only people on the whole planet who don't know that Jesus is nonviolent are Christians. Is he right? The only thing you can say about Jesus is that he's nonviolent. It's the only thing. And that he's the embodiment of nonviolence. And that all the teachings in Matthew 5 and 6 and 7, Gandhi said, are the greatest writings of nonviolence in human history. Gandhi's going in South Africa. I want to be a person of nonviolence. So I have to read my textbook every morning and every evening about how to be a nonviolent person. And I have to work on doing those teachings to change my life, to live according to that. He was not Gandhi. He became Gandhi because he read from Matthew 5 and the Bhagavad Gita chapter 2 every morning and every evening. I actually went to India with Arun Gandhi, his grandson, who was raised by Gandhi. We went to the spot in the Brashram where they read from the Sermon on the Mount. I'm very moved by all this. And so I started to read the Sermon on the Mount a lot more and to give talks about it and to retreats about it. And I wrote a book about it called The Beatitudes of Peace. Well, did you know that all the rage in scripture scholarship and Christian scripture scholarship is the Aramaic, the lost language which Jesus spoke? So there's this guy in France who spent his whole life studying Aramaic, and he translates the Beatitudes back into the original Aramaic, then back through the Greek and the French and the English, and we're all wrong with the translation. Well, this just kills me. I love this. It's not blessed are. Doesn't that sound a little patronizing? Oh, aren't you nice? Blessed. In the Aramaic, it has like 5 teachings. Arise, get up, get moving, start walking, and walk forward. You poor in spirit, you mournful, you meek, you who hunger and thirst for justice. Arise and get moving, you pure in heart, merciful peacemakers and persecuted. Isn't that fantastic? You're looking at me like this guy's had way too much coffee. But I just still pushes all my buttons. This sounds like this guy who's empowering oppressed people on the outskirts of this horrible Roman Empire. And he's mobilizing them to build a campaign of nonviolence. And they arise and he sends them, sending you like lambs into the midst of wolves. And he marches to Jerusalem. And he does civil disobedience in the temple, turning over the tables of the money changers. He's totally nonviolent, doesn't hit anybody, hurt anybody, kill anybody, or drop any nuclear bombs. I just wanted to clarify that. But wow, he's not passive. It's all arise and get moving. And well, if you're messing around in the temple like that, you're going to get arrested and killed. And I wrote a book about it because he did 15 different types of civil disobedience. And then I came to the conclusion that everything Jesus did was illegal. It was just a one-man crime wave walking through the Roman Empire. Well, you can see how I got in trouble thinking like. And then Gandhi says he goes to his death in total nonviolence, saying the violence stops here in my body. You're all forgiven, but the days of killing are over. And in resurrection means having nothing to do with death, not a trace of violence. And he comes back and says, now you go on the campaign of nonviolence. Well, so I started to get invitations to speak. I had the parishes. I'm stepping down from them because I'm really with the movement against the war in Iraq. But some peace friends in New Mexico said, you know, stay here. And they found me this house. It's really a shack on the top of a mountain at 8,000 feet between Santa Fe and Albuquerque. And I moved there in like 2004, totally off the grid, no drinking water, sort of electricity with some really 75-year-old solar panels. I think they were the first ones ever made. And, you know, it's totally handmade, bricks and wooden beams and adobe, and it's glass wall looking out over 100 miles of pristine New Mexico. Gorgeous landscape. And it's, you know, I show up there, and my first night the house was surrounded by coyotes, and they start howling, and I hit the ceiling. I was so... Now I go out and howl with them. I'm trying to make them laugh here, Karen. I know. It's just, yeah, it's a setback for everybody here. How do you talk about... So I'm thinking about the Beatitudes, and I'm studying all my teachers with you and like you in the movement. And then I'm remembering Thomas Merton, the great spiritual writer. He wrote an essay, and he says the third Beatitude is all wrong. And that pushes all my buttons, too. It's not blessed are the meek. Now, Jesus, in these teachings, which Gandhi is reading every single day, is Jesus is playing with the themes of justice and peace from the Psalms. And the word meekness in Hebrew, it would be invoke gentleness and humility. That's what we think. And Merton says that's not it at all. He wrote this in 1965. Merton says Jesus is talking about Dr. King. Active, creative nonviolence. It's the third sentence in the Sermon on the Mount. Arise and go forward, you people like Dr. King, of active, creative nonviolence. This is according to Merton. You're going to be one with the earth. Have you ever thought about that before? Isn't that fantastic? It still gets me excited. The mind, the imagination of the nonviolent Jesus. And looking out over this spectacular creation where I was living, having come from right from ground zero, living with Daniel Berrigan on Broadway, it was such a culture shock. And I've been all over the world and in jails all over the country and war zones around the world. I began to feel one with creation. I've been trying, like you, to unpack this Dr. King's message of nonviolence forever. And Jesus saying, active nonviolence leads to oneness with the earth. Well, do the math. If you totally reject Jesus' way of nonviolence, which the church did in 315, when the horrible Emperor Constantine theoretically denounces he's now Christian, which is an illegal religion, anyone who's a Christian is beheaded. Okay, now I'm a Christian, we can all be Christian, it's all legalized, which means you can all join the Roman army. Because he's thrown out the Sermon on the Mount and turned to the pagan Cicero, who's all about killing, and that led to the creation of the just war theory. So we can kill for Jesus, which had nothing to do with the great climax of the Sermon on the Mount, which is love your enemies. Jesus didn't say, however, if they're really bad, and you meet these seven conditions, bomb the hell out of them. So for 1,700 years, we have totally rejected the Sermon on the Mount. Maybe Gandhi's the only person who ever really read it every morning and every evening. Like, ever. If you do that, according to the mind of this imaginary person, if you're with me, catastrophic climate change. Those who do not practice active, creative, Kingian nonviolence are not one with the earth. Well, they will not inherit the promised land, and they will destroy the earth. And here we are tonight on this solemn anniversary. And so that's what I was trying to write about, to make what's the connection between nonviolence and oneness with the earth in this moment. And Bill McKibben, our friend and hero at 350.org, said, John, this is an original book. No one has done this. I said, no, Jesus said this 2,000 years ago. And he said, oh, yeah, I forgot. I'm just trying to tell him. So it's so good to be together and to remember Martin Luther King, our teacher. With all that you've been fighting against and all that we're up against in this terrible moment. I like Harry Potter, so I'll just say, he who shall not be named. You know, very dangerous, cruel, mentally ill, greedy, war-making, lying, racist, sexist, narcissistic sociopath who is leading us towards non-existence. And we're going right on full steam ahead. And this is what all of you have been resisting. But to me, it's obvious. Once you kill Dr. King and Senator Kennedy, then you get to Nixon and full-on Vietnam War, and let's kill 3 million people in Indochina, which leads to Ronald Reagan and the wars in Central America and nuclear weapons, which leads to the Bushes and total destruction, killing 1.5 million people in Iraq and now Afghanistan and now what we're coping with. There's a direct lineage here over these 50 years, in my opinion, as I've studied this. You and I want to be the people that Martin was talking about. We want to rise to the occasion and step into Martin's shoes, doesn't matter how old we are, till the day we die, and reach the heights of nonviolence that our teacher showed us, and to make that connection that Jesus talked about that you and I don't yet really understand, or I don't. We're in permanent warfare. We're bombing 7 nations tonight at least, maybe more like 15. But we actually sell weapons to both sides in all the 35 wars. Well, you know all of this. 750 military bases in over 150 nations. Last week, another $1 trillion basically for killing. We're talking about death as a social methodology now. But I could talk about total rampant racism and the issues you're dealing with here in Madison and Milwaukee with segregation and police brutality and, well, mass incarceration and sexism, torture, executions, but corporate greed leading to 4 billion people in total inhumanity, poverty, with no food, water, housing, healthcare, jobs, education, just human dignity. The UN says 800 million people are starving to death. We're talking about like a culture of system, a structure of violence that's beyond our comprehension. So Trump is a symbol of the whole insanity of violence, the epidemic of violence, which is now so institutionalized that we're headed toward the brink with permanent war on the earth. 6 million species about to go extinct in the next few decades. You know all of this. But it's so overwhelming to think about it that we can't, and we don't. But I think if we're going to rise to the occasion like Dr. King and honor him and our own humanity, we want to look at it and to say a word about climate change.
You've been listening to part one of a presentation by John Deere on peace and nonviolence. In the next episode, we'll hear more from John Deere, the author and activist for peace and nonviolence, who's planning the campaign, helping plan the campaign Nonviolence Week of Actions in mid-September. He'll be talking in the next episode about his latest book, which is entitled They Will Inherit the Earth, subtitled Peace and Nonviolence in a Time of Climate Change. So that's just right on stuff for what we do here at the Common Good Podcast. We certainly hope you'll be tuning in for that next episode. Also, we're going to be giving you an episode soon in which we interview Grace Jerry. The interest in that episode, at least to me, is that Grace was born in China as part of this, you know, this kind of imperialistic missionary movement that happened in the Christian church. Everyone was trying to do a good job about evangelizing the world, you know, and this kind of thinking. But there was zero consciousness among most of these people how imperialistic that all is. Well, Grace moved from that into missionary work herself in Latin America, she and her husband, where they became really quite liberationist in their thinking. Well, that's all coming up in an episode very soon. And then I just ask, have you listened to other recent episodes? So in late June and early July, we hosted Bill Ryerson of the Population Institute and Population Media Center. We did a couple of events, a couple of episodes with him. And wow, that's just such an important topic that lots of people won't touch. Human population is a taboo in lots of activist circles. Well, it's really important that you listen to Bill Ryerson if you haven't already done so. Whenever you listen to our podcast, well, we're sure that you'll pick up thoughts that you'll value. I know that Jerry and I do. We keep learning all the time through the interviews that we conduct. So what else would you like to recommend, Jerry?
Well, I would urge our listeners to subscribe to my Simpler Living Daily Nudge to get quick reminders of Lee's blogs, the Common Good podcast, Simple Living Works podcast, and other intriguing happenings and events such as Non-Conform Freely Celebrations, ways to honor rites of passage and holidays without consumerism. Well, please tell us your thoughts on these subjects. Leave a message on the Common Good podcast and Simple Living Works Facebook pages. Time to wrap up this episode. If you're a regular listener, you've heard our closing comments, so we'll say goodbye now. But if you're a newer listener, here's what we'd like you to know about the podcast. Please subscribe to our Jubilee Economics, One Earth, and Simple Living blogs. We post new nearly every week, so if you're a subscriber, you'll be told when we post something new. Subscriptions are free. Subscribe to our blogs through our websites. You can also subscribe to the Common Good podcast and Simple Living Works podcast at iTunes or your favorite podcast service. Urge your friends to do the same. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works with co-host Lee Van Ham of the Common Good podcast and Jubilee One Earth Economics, wishing you well as we strive together to bring simpler One Earth living into being for the common good.
Simply live, learn to live simply so others can live.